The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 606, recorded on March 29th, 2021.
Welcome to the 606th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 439th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I'm TJ Dunzer.
I'm Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry.
So, last podcast, we talked about the Vita, right? Because they were, Sony was shutting down the stores for the PS3, the PSP, and the Vita. And out of curiosity, I went to check to see the last time the Vita was a topic of any podcast. And the last podcast was over 200 episodes ago, back in October 2015.
That's really sad.
That's a long time ago.
It had a lot of JRPGs on it, a lot of role-playing games that I wasn't aware of that were on there. So it seemed to have some good titles.
Here's the problem with the Vita. It was a lot of useless shit on a good handheld. There was a lot of useless shit on the handheld that Sony just decided to put everything on it. It made the Vita super expensive. No one cared about UMDs. I mean, I'm pretty sure some people care, but who cared about watching movies on a Vita? You know, you could do that on a cell phone. You know, they wanted to make it the everything machine, and it failed. And by the way, that's why the Xbox One was unpopular, because Microsoft was going too much with, we want this to replace your cable box or your TV. You know.
Yeah.
People want to play video games to be video games. Yeah, no matter how badly Nintendo's fucked up in the past and the future, they've always said, we make video games.
They've stayed focused. They've stayed on target.
Yeah. Although they're starting to lose focus a bit, but we'll talk about that another time. Here's the name of the article, though. Sony says handheld doesn't make sense for them. And guess what? That's apparently true, because after the Vita, there's been no Sony handheld.
I would rephrase that. Handheld doesn't make sense to us. In other words, they don't know how to handle or deal with it or use it.
Well, here's the thing. Nintendo agrees with them, because the next console they made was a hybrid, because they didn't trust the handheld. And as many 3DSs have been sold, Nintendo considers it sort of a failure. So they decided, we're not doing handheld either, because of cell phones. We're not going to completely give up on the handheld concept. We're just going to make a console that you can have handheld.
Didn't Nintendo say their competition was the mobile market?
Yeah, they did. They did say that. Which is why you don't see a new DS or a 3DS or whatever, you know. You don't see a new a Nintendo handheld, because they decided, you know what? We're just going to have a handheld, but we're going to fuse it with our console. And it works. Speaking of which, some of the new things that Bloomberg is claiming about the next Switch, which we did not have info on when the podcast was recorded, was that it was going to have new NVIDIA chips and all this other stuff. And some third-party console peripheral makers are making new controllers for the Switch that don't drift. Mm-hmm. And Qualcomm wants to make a Switch clone. They want to make their own version of the Switch. To which I say, didn't NVIDIA do that with the Shield? Oh, no, wait, that's something different.
They did, and then also Alienware had something at CES 2020 that was kind of like a Switch. It was like a Switch format that plays PC games.
Well, you know, Ryzen, I know I had bought their controller for my cell phone, which turns my cell phone into a Switch to play Xbox Game Pass games.
Mm-hmm.
And other games. Here's the thing. The difference between the Ryzen that I have and the regular Ryzen controller is that it has the Xbox button. That's the only thing. I'm paying I paid $10 extra to have that Xbox button. But if I wanted to, I could play other Android games with that controller. I just haven't found a game that I wanted to, because most of the games I play on my Android are games like Cooking Dash or Mad King Ludwig or Seven Wonders. You know, a lot of strategy games, which really don't need a controller. They just need a touchscreen. So, yeah. What have you been playing, Scott?
I've been playing the DLC for Phoenix Rising, which is the Mysteries of the East. And it's a whole scenario that takes place in a Chinese setting. And so you're exploring the mythology of ancient China. And same mechanics and everything, but the backdrop is China instead of Greece.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of trailers for that going around. The Immortals Fenyx Rising Myths of the Eastern Realm DLC.
It's a really nice expansion, really nice, you know, addition to the game. You know, it's not just another level or something.
Yeah.
It's just the whole area that you get to explore.
That's good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. How about you, TJ? What have you been playing?
I've been working on a review of Balan Wonderworld this last week.
Okay. You know, I read someone comment. You know, it's actually kind of odd now to have what is it called again? Mascot platformers again. You know, they used to be all the rage and. The Balan Wonderland is a mascot platformer.
It really does feel like a game tugged out of a bygone era, for better and for worse. I will say, like, platforming, mechanics, it is fun, as far as, like, it's pretty fun in its gameplay, as far as, like, utilizing the different abilities and exploring the environment.
Well, here's a question. Is it innovative, or is it stock? I would imagine it's stock, which is part of the appeal.
It's what's the word for it? It's novel. Like,
okay.
it's novel in a way that, like, it brings the parts I like about games like Banjo-Kazooie and Mario 64 and games to the table.
You say Banjo-Kazooie, and my mind just goes back 3 years ago when you were complaining about having to write a guide for ukulele.
Sure, but it also doesn't feel like a huge collectathon.
Yeah, I'm just saying, whenever you say Banjo-Kazooie, I think ukulele and you and the guide.
But I think a part of that is that I had an issue with ukulele's level design. It didn't really like strike me in a way that made me want to explore the levels that much.
Yeah, Balan ukulele Wonderworld, felt very stock.
Balan Wonderworld's environment its visual aesthetic is something it gets right.
Let me ask you a question: Is it Nights Under Dreams?
Well, hold on. Let me get there.
Okay.
It presents the levels in a way that that makes me want to explore them and makes me want to see more of what's going on in them. But it has all sorts of little things that like get on my nerves about that kind of game. For one, like if there's all these little enemies that spawn at predetermined places throughout levels. Destroy them. If you stay in the area too long, in the spot where they spawn, they'll just respawn. And it's really kind of annoying because they're not, like, combat is not this game's strong suit, and it's not fun to fight any of the normal enemies. Moreover, I played the preview, like, thinking, man, I can't wait for them to, like, flesh this out and see what's what's going on with this story. I get the full game, it's like, they don't do anything to explain what the hell is going on.
So what you're saying is that its story is it's a video game.
Its story is it's a video game. Yeah. It's like, that's kind of the old school, like, that old school aesthetic where there wasn't really a story going on unless you had the manual and you read through it from front to back. And it's like, but there's so many things in the game that are like, what is that? What is it for? Is it cool? I don't know. Maybe. There's like, yeah, for instance, there's this, the hub world that you go back to all the time has these little fluffy birds that you like collect. And they build this little machine for themselves that's kind of like a big old, like, it's kind of like a big Rube Goldberg contraption that they just ride around on all the time and build up a counter. And the more they build up the counter, the more they add to it. So you, like, collect more of these birds and they build up the counter faster and add more stuff onto their thing. For what purpose? I have no idea. It never tells me. It never tells me. And I'm like, I'm so far into the game, and I have no idea what these birds are for, what they want, what the machine that they're making is about. It's weird. It's weird to have that much.
It sounds like they're a progress meter, and that's about it.
It's weird to have that much, like, activity going on and no context for it.
So what about the characters? How's Balin himself?
Whimsical. About, like, they tell you about as much as him. Like, every part of this game, including Balin, they tell you so little about what's happening. There's, like, so much going on, and they tell you nothing about what it is about.
So it's the J.J. Abrams method of storytelling.
I think Balin is a very over-the-top and funny character, but that's all I can say because I don't... And obviously, he's super powerful because he does all sorts of crazy shit throughout the game. He is basically the stand-in Knights into Dreams character that, like, ties everything back to that age of this game.
You know, I think the developers know their audience, and what I think they're counting on is for the audience to tell a story, because you know how it is, you know. When you have a character, you don't give them too much information, and fans start making up stories for them.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. There's just too many holes in what it strikes me as is, like, there, because there's a good amount of quality gameplay in there. There's just so many gaping holes that it strikes me in many ways as a rush job. Like, they had to meet a deadline, and they didn't have time to fill those gaps.
Yeah.
And so what you got is, like, it's good game. It's pretty good gameplay with some annoyances, and just completely missing blocks of context.
Which means expect some DLC.
Yeah.
Anyways, I've been playing. Okay, so I got back into Fallout 4 because it's on Game Pass, and I decided, you know what, I'm going to get some PC achievements. And here's the weird part. Knowing the story, I'm more involved with what's going on in Fallout 4 than I was when I first played it. Because I know what's going on, I know the backstory before the character does, and it's just so depressing to play it. Knowing everything that I know, what?
It's a very grim game to begin with. You know, you have this apocalyptic hellscape, and
We've been there, Bill. I mean, we've been there a couple of times already.
Yeah.
The difference between him and the other characters is that he's actually a pre-war.
Yeah, that's true.
And he remembers everything from before. But also, the entire thing with Sean, and I'm going to tell you something, the music that's in Diamond City and Good Neighbor, it is a sad, somber, wistful theme.
I think all the music is, really.
No, I'm talking about in those two cities where they share the same theme. Mm-hmm. It's just this lonely piano. And when he's talking... What?
When you're out in the wilderness, there's this, like, bagpipe kind of playing in the wind at one point.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some other sad tunes in this game.
But I'm just saying, for Diamond City and Good Neighbor, it's about the people, and it seems to be related to Sean, because when you here's the thing, when you're talking to Nick about your case and about him, and that music's playing, it seems like, yeah, there's just so much pain in it. So I'm getting a lot more out of Fallout 4. Also, I am not rushing through it. I am sticking around. Here's the funniest thing about the first time I played Fallout 4. I did not meet Strong. I did not meet Kate. I did not hire or that bounty hunter that's in the bar. I never really, you know, I stayed with Nick for the most of the game. I didn't really need anybody else. I decided, you know, knowing that Hancock loves the Silver Shroud, I kept him around for a while. I mean, I still default to Nick. And I'm probably going to buy the Far Harbor DLC knowing it's all about Nick and his origins. So I'll probably do that at some point. Now, the other game I played is on Game Pass, and it's kind of disappointing, because I played the demo a couple of months ago, and I really liked the demo, and that's Genesis Noir, which is a black-and-white adventure game. Well, sort of black-and-white. I mean, there's splashes of color in it. And the demo had a better story than the main game does. The demo was this abstract, jazzy thing, which sort of seemed to be going on the theme of using jazz and surreal imagery to depict the life of a musician. That's not what Genesis Noir is about. Genesis Noir is about the Big Bang and the creation of the universe, and the characters are just representations of that in a noir thing. And I'm not spoiling anything, because the game makes it very clear. And that ruins it for me. I do not like games that are so pretentious that they say, this is what it's about. We're going to tell you right now. This is the Big Bang. The singer's name is Miss Mass. What's it called? And they tell you about the origin of the universe. And I'm saying, no. That is just so bad storytelling. I liked it when I didn't know what it was about. And it's a puzzle game that gets really hard at some point. And I decided, you know, I'm not going to bother. I'm not in love with the story anymore. It's treating me like I'm an idiot. And I like the story about the 50s depicted by black and white, monochromatic world that's abstract and talks about living in the jazz world. That would have been a game I would have loved to play. This is just preachy and pretentious, and I don't care. Their demo promised one thing, and they gave me another, which is the gameplay was sort of similar. But here's also the other thing. The gameplay in the demo really didn't have that many puzzles. It was just you exploring and, you know, getting certain keys and opening those keys and moving on. I like that much more than what Genesis Noir wants to be. It's a heartbreaking disappointment, because I like indie adventure games that look different. A game that was just taken off Game Pass was Machinarium. You ever play that? That was from 2001. It's a black and white hand-drawn game about robots, and there's not a single line of dialogue in it.
I don't think I've heard of that game. I'll have to look it up.
If you look up Machinarium, you'll say, oh, that game. It's a game everybody knows but doesn't remember the name of. Came out way back, way, way back, and it was revolutionary for the time as an adventure game, because A, adventure games weren't that popular, and B, it had no dialogue. The entire game was done by reactions of the characters, and it was charming as hell. And if you can find it, it's probably $5, buy it, you'll love it. It's charming beyond all belief. The next game I'm probably going to play is Octopath Traveler, because everybody's beating my head over it and how beautiful it is and how much of a beautiful NES-style game it is and so on and so forth. Yes, I know, thank you. It's not my kind of game, but you know what, I'll play it just so if people ask me about it, I can I can talk about it.
Yeah, it's very old-school Final Fantasy. I didn't think it would be your kind of game either, but if it's on Game Pass, you might as well just check it out, see what you think. It does have beautiful music. The art is very nice. I enjoyed it. I don't know if you'll like the story or not, but it was an enjoyable game for me.
Here's the thing. A game that was just released on Game Pass was Narita Boy, which looks like it's a... I wouldn't say retro, because the graphics are too good for retro. Retro gameplay-styled trap platformer beat-em-up sort of thing with a sword. So I'll probably try that. But tomorrow I am buying, And I think Shack News already did a review, which I did not read. Evil Genius 2 comes out tomorrow, which I will definitely be on, all like white on rice. And TJ, I know you're interested in that too, right?
Yes. And yeah, we did do a review on that game. I'm not gonna spoil anything, but it good.
Yeah, I mean, if it was 75% of what the game promised, I'd be satisfied. You know.
Mhm.
It pushes my buttons.
Yeah. I've been very much enjoying what I've seen about that game, and I've read a few reviews worth of coverage today, and I'm really it's got me even more excited. That game is looking like it's probably going to be the strategy game of the year. It could be up there in people's top tens.
Another thing I noticed, by the way, speaking of strategy games, is that there are so many games being announced right now that are XCOM with blank. You know, like, I got a review copy for a game that's XCOM in space, you know, on a spaceship. And I got a press release for a game that was XCOM but medieval. And it's like, when you have a simple gameplay concept, it's a tactical game, but not a Final Fantasy tactical game, but it's a tactical game. Once you have something that's very simple to make, and it gets popular, you see clones of it everywhere. I mean, same thing happened with Open World, same thing happened at RTSs back in the day. You know, retro-style JRPGs. It's like... And I'm glad, you know. That's what's great about digital distribution and the internet, is that you can have games that come out, and also Kickstarter, that companies will say, well, those don't sell. Well, guess what? You announce that game to people who want to play it, and hey, it's selling! Companies really can't tell people what will sell anymore. Now you have Kickstarter, and people will say, this sells. Oh, yeah, and this is going to be shocking for you two to hear, but I've been getting more and more into NBA 2K21. And there's this reason why.
Wow.
Because I finally went into the My League thing. Not My GM, which sucks on toast, but My League. And I created an expansion team from the ground up. Uniform, arena, everything. The Montreal Dragons. And I also used five other pre-made expansion teams. Went through the expansion draft. And I'm having a ball, because guess what I can do in my league? It's completely single player. Therefore, I can control the sliders. I don't have to worry. I'm not playing online. It's not meant for online. And they didn't touch it. And it's fairly deep. So I'm enjoying that. And it's amazing how much better a game is when you're not bound to VC or other microtransaction bullshit. So there. I found the one part of NBA 2K21 that I actually enjoy. And I am a league... a league simulator type of guy. I mean, I love Out of the Park Baseball. I always play, you know... I mean, I enjoy the Road to the Show type of things, which is, you know, which is a career mode. But I also like, you know, making a league mode, too. Because I like making my own stories. I mean, if there's one... Here's the thing. If there's one way to grab me, it's to allow me to create a story. Whether that be something like Mass Effect, in which all your decisions have a thing. Or it might be Evil Genius 2, in which you're making a story based on what you do. Or you're doing a sports game. You know, if you allow me to make the story, I'm a happy camper. That's why I love Civilization so much, because I'm creating an alternate history. Speaking of which, Scott, did you see that that article I posted? It was, they showed that Portugal can make gobs and gobs and gobs of gold.
Yeah. The new Venice, basically, they can make more trade routes than anybody else. They can, I guess they have some other things going on.
I think every tile that has a road on it also generates gold.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
Oh, wow. That's old school then.
Well, here's the thing, for those who don't know, roads are created by merchants, for the most part. I mean, you can get a builder, but usually it's useless to build roads, because The roads build themselves because of the traders. Scott?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I guess they have more trade routes than anyone, so that's definitely something that Venice used to do. Mm-hmm. And then I guess they have some maritime trade routes, and then if you're saying they have... they're a trade civilization that's gone crazy, and they they're making this much money.
Yeah, I mean, they just are overpowered. They're going to be nerfed at some point.
Yeah.
DJ, you were going to say something? Oh, look, I have an update on Civilization 4. I wonder if that's the nerf.
Huh. I don't really get why you would go back and nerf previous... I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. There is a multiplayer mode.
They constantly rebalance the Civ, so none of them are too powerful or too runaway.
Yeah.
And try to make things balanced out so it's not OP.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Portugal was released on the 25th, which is 4 days ago at the time of this recording. And people quickly found out a way to abuse Portugal. Anyways, we're going to go on to the game news. The first one is PAX 2021 plans revealed, and this comes from a press release. ReedPop released a press release regarding their plans for Penny Arcade Expo this year, East in particular. According to the presser, in light of ongoing public health concerns, ReedPop and Penny Arcade will not hold PAX East this year. Given the United States' progress towards addressing COVID-19 in recent months, we are cautiously optimistic PAX West and PAX Unplugged will proceed as planned with in-person festivities September 3rd through 6th and December 10th through 12th, respectively. Since we can't wait until September to reconnect with a wonderful PAX community, PAX Online will return July 15th through the 18th. We hope to build on the success of last year's record-breaking event and also engage with our community in new ways, such as the Indie Showcase that will take place between now and PAX Online. We expect to hear more about these exciting plans soon. They go on to state, we will only move forward with a live PAX once we are confident the show will be safe for everyone and hope to return to Boston in 2022. So, yeah. And judging by certain states, they haven't gotten the message that things aren't okay yet.
Yeah. PAX has been... Like, seeing PAX canceled has been maybe the one that hit me hardest recently. Just because, like, PAX South is like a ritual for me. PAX South is at the beginning of the year. It was right in my backyard of San Antonio. And it's like kind of the way I kick my year of travel off. I'm just like, when PAX South got canceled, I expected it, but at the same time, I was like, man, it just feels so weird not having that thing that I've been doing for years be like the kickoff to my year of like business travel and event coverage and all that jazz. Mm.
Well, I've been to every...
Just...
Go ahead, TJ.
Plus, it's like PAX in general is so much more comfy and cozy compared to like a lot of the other events.
Really? Because so... I've gone to PAX East every single year.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. I gone to PAX East every single year, including when I was living in Los Angeles.
Yeah. And I mean, I just feel like it's easier to form the connections at PAX and get like really personal with coverage.
Hmm.
And enjoy like the what somebody is showing you. Like, it's not like I'm not in a hurry and trying to get a whole bunch of stuff done in a short amount of time when I'm at PAX, but it feels a lot more chill than something like E3 ever did.
I went to PAX Unplugged for the first time last year, or not last year, but 2 years ago. I was actually, as an exhibitor, I was helping Slugfest Games, but I also had a press pass. And I'll tell you, I fell in love with PAX Unplugged right away. And it's close by to me. It's in Philly. So I hope to go back this year. I mean, here's the thing. PAX East is nice, and they have a board game floor. But when the entire show is devoted to board games...
Yeah, that sounds rad.
So
PAX Unplugged is definitely one that I've always wanted to like go and see, just because I do enjoy a good tabletop game.
Yeah. So, Scott, have you ever gone to PAX?
No, I have not.
You have to. Well, as soon as they announce it, get that three-day pass, and just go hog wild.
Mm-hmm. That does sound like a lot of fun.
Here's the thing. PAX knows how to treat media, and it knows how to treat consumers.
Mm-hmm.
You know? PAX has everything that you'd want. I mean, I know some people who go to the, what's it called? The retro arcade. Stay there for 3 days and don't come out. Mm. And the retro console. Because you can, here's the thing about PAX is that you can, with your ID, you can borrow any retro console game, any board game, and just play in a play space. And I know there's a lot of people who bring their gigantic controllers for Steel Battalion for the Xbox, and they have their tournament there. Steel Battalion is a religion, I found.
Yeah.
It is a religion. I mean, here's the thing. It's a game that didn't have that sold okay, but only because it had gigantic controllers attached to it. But that game is the mech sim if you want to have full immersion. It's a pity that the Kinect version didn't do well, that it couldn't work well. One of these days, someone's going to realize, you know, let's create gigantic controllers again and make Steel Battalion the way it should be, and the hype will be through the roof, even if it doesn't sell that much. Because can you imagine with next-gen graphics, a fully immersive mech game?
That would be delightful.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, imagine a PC version with VR support and that controller.
Mm-hmm. That would be wild.
Yeah. Anyways, so yeah, I mean, here's the thing. PAX is great. If you can get the 3-day pass, go right ahead. If you can't, usually you can get the Friday, Saturday, Sunday individual. It'll cost a little bit more, but it's still worth it. And hell, they even try to make being in line fun. Because you know those long goddamn lines? Well, guess what? They have entertainment during those lines. And a lot of times, the fans will make their own fun, too. Expect to find beach balls on the line.
Yeah.
The other thing is that PAX is also smart enough that the first day of PAX, they let the media in an hour early. And usually that means I go straight to Behemoth Games because they have the breakfast there. It's not anything, you know, bagels, orange juice, coffee, whatever. It's not anything tremendously but fancy, but I do enjoy getting my free breakfast there. Also, there are also people who go there strictly for the panels. And goddamn, those panel lines can get long. Fortunately, yes. they have monitors all over the place saying what percentage of the line is filled for that panel. And usually there'll be a line for the panel after the panel that's going to go on. So you got to pick your panels. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Go ahead, Scott.
Okay, hold on a second.
Battlefield 6.
Yeah, hold on. I think... Okay. Okay, we did the packs. Okay, Battlefield 6 rumors are rife with spaghetti. This is from PC Gamer. According to a recent tweet, Battlefield 6 will have large-scale and close-quarter battles, next-level destruction, and stunning visual effects, among other things. The tweet by Roberto Serrano, a.k.a. Geronimo 73, points to a modern warfare setting. 16-128 multiplayer matches, customization for soldiers, weapons and vehicles, and fall 2021 release date. The tweet also lists a Battle Royale component, which reportedly rolls out as early as 2022 as a free-to-play title. The official response from Battlefield cryptic, to say the least. was cryptic, to say the least. Then said something about Spaghetti's noodles.
Hashtag Spaghetti.
Oh, hashtag Spaghetti. Noodly, soupy, good sauce, good with garlic braise. I don't know what any of that crap means. I guess they're going to have spaghetti in the game. I don't know. Elsewhere, EA...
No, wait. Hashtag Spaghetti. Noodly, slippy, good with sauce, good with garlic bread, is spaghetti, can be used as decoration, always available,
yeah.
Asterisk, available as pasta.
Okay. And that has to be, I don't know. So elsewhere, EA has reportedly issued a survey to some players via PC Games N, quizzing on a range of features, including a battle pass. The other rumor is that Microsoft will feature Battlefield 6 for their E3 2021 press briefing. Stay tuned.
Yeah, so they did the spaghetti in the same font as Battlefield. People are trying to figure out just what they mean by all that. I guess it means it takes place in Italy?
Maybe it's a new sort of physics. They're all going to be all rubbery and wibbly wobbly.
No, that's totally accurate battle simulator. TJ, what do you think?
I really haven't cared too much for Battlefield in quite a while. So, like, I don't know what to make of spaghetti memes about the game.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm not into...
Maybe instead of zombies, they'll have spaghetti. Every game has a zombie mode. This will be a spaghetti mode.
Yeah, I keep hearing that they're getting ready to do their next one sooner or later this year, but, like... at least they're having fun, I guess.
Yeah. Here's the thing, though. This is a long... and even accounting for the pandemic, it's been a long development cycle for Battlefield 6. Like, yeah. They're really trying to not screw this one up.
Yeah, the last one was what? Battlefield 5?
Or was it Battlefield 1?
I think that was before Battlefield 5.
Let me check. Battlefield video game series. The last one was 5, yeah. And they had a bunch of DLC for it, including one this last year called Into the Jungle. So, yeah, I mean, Battlefield 5 was not well received.
Mm-hmm.
So. And
this, yeah, so, I mean, I feel like a lot of people just, like, want bad company to, like, in all forms to return. That was the last time I really, really had fun with Battlefield, was Bad Company 2.
If they're going a little bit kooky on their response, maybe that's a hint that it might be Bad Company.
That'd be nice.
Because for those of you who don't know, Bad Company 2 wasn't the most serious of games.
No, not at all. But it had a really, really great multiplayer setup and, like, really good environmental destruction and good maps. I think that one had some of the best maps in the entire series.
Yeah, and like they hinted around, this is going to be your next-gen game. And you're going to see a lot more games as 2021 closes that are going to be for Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5 only. By the way, that reminds me, have you heard about the troubles that Tony Hawk 1 and 2 is having on the Xbox Series X?
It's having a few troubles across the board as far as this next-gen thing goes. Yeah, it's like, Activision came up with the most cockamamie nonsense when it came to their upgrade system. with Xbox in particular, their whole deal was you can upgrade your game as long as you if you had a digital copy or if you had a premium version disc copy. If you bought a standard edition disc, you don't get to upgrade to Series X. Why?
That
because
makes
fuck
no
you.
Sense. No rentals allowed.
They expect you to buy the game entirely a second time if you want to upgrade to the Xbox Series X.
That's just funky.
And I can tell you, like, I've had issues with. I have a digital version of the game for PS4, and I upgraded it to the PS5 version, and it was the most nonsensical bullshit I've seen in a save transfer in a while. I have. PlayStation 5 lets you access PS4 and PS5 versions of a game when the options are available. Like, for instance, I have the Dead by Daylight PS4 version loaded onto my PS5 console because, for some reason, the PS5 console version won't play nicely with the PS4 version. And my buddies are on PS4.
That's child's play. I mean, the real dick move is not allowing you to use your PS4 controller with PS5 games.
Well, let me get to what I was going to say. In order to get... Like the instructions for getting the PS4 version of your save data over to the PS5 version are to turn on your PS4, upload your save data to a cloud server, go to your PS5 version, and download the cloud save data, which, like, whatever. But also, you can just transfer your save data over to a PS5 along with the PS4 version of the game. So, like, I had the PS4 version on my PS5, and I'm just like, okay, so theoretically I have the save data on my console already. That should just work, right? Nope. From the PS5, I have to go into the PS4 version, upload it to this cloud, and then re-download the save data onto the same machine that I just uploaded it from on the PS4. It's obnoxious.
The Phoenix Rising game, you can play your save across any platform. I was just reading that on their website. If you play on PlayStation 4, you can easily transfer it over to your PC, or I think even PlayStation 5 version. So that's pretty good of Ubisoft, at least.
Yeah, I haven't had to transfer too much single-player save data, but I think I'm spoiled by, like,
smart delivery.
I'm spoiled by live service games like Dead by Daylight and Apex Legends.
And also, well, I'm spoiled by smart delivery.
It just makes no sense to, like, have to upload save data from the same machine and then re-download it to the same machine to make it work on a new version of a game.
Because you're a dirty, rotten thief, and they want to make sure that you pay.
pay.
It's just
every customer is a potential thief, don't you know?
Yeah.
Hey, let's move on to some happier news. Go ahead with the next item, TJ.
Alrighty. Seven Deadly Sins Hitman 3 new DLC drops March 30th from press release. New DLC is coming to Hitman 3 on March 30th. The Seven Deadly Sins is a 7-part expansion for Hitman 3 that takes players deep inside the mind of Agent 47, take on new challenges, unlock unique rewards, and discover whether Agent 47 can resist all seven sins. The Seven Deadly Sins collection includes 7 content packs, each focused on a different sin. The content packs will be released over time, starting with Act 1, Greed. Each content pack includes a new contract on an existing location and sin-themed unlockable items. The first DLC content pack, Greed, will be available on March 30th, 2021. All 7 packs are included in a discounted rate in the Seven Deadly Sins collection for $30. But each DLC pack can also be purchased individually for $5.
So you're saving $5 if you buy the entire collection. Okay. I can't wait to get to Lust. Gluttony. I mean, so it says it's going to be in an existing location, which tells me they're just going to add content to different levels that you already have.
These are all like extensions of emotion that I've never seen at Agent 47 exhibit. So
yeah, I mean, you've seen anger, don't you? Haven't you? Actually, no. He's
pretty cold about what he does.
Yeah.
Like, maybe pride? Maybe pride at, like, most. But everything else is, like, those are all things that it's going to be, like, what are they going to do with this?
What are they going to do with sloth?
I don't know if I'm prepared to deal with horny Agent 47.
It says, or Agent 47 resisting all seven sins. Now, on first blush, if I didn't read the, it would be like, oh, you'll be dealing with targets who embody those. You know, you have a greedy target, a lustful target. No. It all has to do with Agent 47.
Mm-hmm.
Who has all the personality of a brick.
Yeah, he's a British brick, and he has no emotions.
But I know you're going to be on this like white on rice, because you've constantly said that you're falling in love with the Hitman, the reboot Hitman series.
Yes, I've been playing my way through Hitman 1 little by little. I'm almost through that one, and I'm almost ready to move on to Hitman 2. And Hitman 3, like, oh my god, I've seen, like, the coverage that we're working on, and the layouts, the levels that I've seen, and their themes, it's just delightful. I love the Dartmoor Mansion, where you basically are, there's a murder mystery going on while you're trying to kill somebody.
Basically, you're doing Hercule Poirot as Agent 47.
Uh-huh.
Because it takes place in an Hercule Poirot story, basically.
Yes. And there's like a straight up full-on whodunit narrative going on in this mansion while you're also trying to murder someone.
Yeah.
I love the storytelling, the environmental storytelling they've always done with Hitman, and it looks like they took it to the next level in Hitman 3.
Yep. We did your splooging for you. Ubisoft, we already we promoted your game, so send us money now. No, but I'm glad you're enjoying it. I mean, I have the Hitman games. I haven't played them because I time. And the Hitman series. Here's the thing about Hitman is I on the stealth stuff, I prefer Thief over Hitman. I prefer a Thief game. Unfortunately, the last Thief game sucked, so yeah. I'm just stuck. And, you know, the original three Thief games are getting long in the tooth.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyways, if you love the writing, you know, I know that's the primary reason why you're looking forward to this.
What's it?
I said, I know you love the writing, which is why you're looking forward to this.
Yes. If it wasn't just for the writing, it would also be the fact that every Hitman level is freaking gorgeous
and gigantic.
Yeah, one of the levels in Hitman 3 is one of the biggest buildings in the world in India, and you're basically up in this skyscraper that stretches up over the clouds.
Yeah,
it looks almost fantastical, but it's based on a real place.
Well, which one is it? Is it the 42 or the Imperial 2? It's easy to tell the difference between it because the Imperial 2 is a pair of buildings, while the 42 is just a long thin building.
Let me pull that up. There is.
If it's a pair of buildings that sort of look like temples, then it's the Imperial 2. If it's a long, thin building, then it's the 42.
Trying to pull it up really quick.
Because here's the thing, the 42 was built in 2018, and it edged out the Imperial 2 by like 30 meters, 30 feet.
It's Dubai.
Oh no, Dubai! Oh, you're talking about the Burj Khalifa.
Yes, it is.
Not India. It's Indonesia.
Yeah, my bad.
The Burj Khalifa, which is the tallest building in the world.
Oh, you're right. That's my bad.
Yeah.
Oops,
the Burj Khalifa was in damn, what was the name of the game? Spec Ops: The Line. It was half buried in the snowstorm. And it was also in one of the Mission Impossible movies. I think Mission Impossible 2. I'm not sure. I don't watch those movies. But I know one of them had Ethan Drake going up. Ethan or whatever. Not Ethan Drake. Was his last name Drake? Ethan. Tom Cruise. He was scaling the side of the Burj Khalifa in that movie. But yeah, I mean, Burj Khalifa is a good location to have for an assassination game.
Yes. And like I said, you operate the assassination from like a top level of the skyscraper, yep. And you're like the area that you're on is above the clouds, and the whole thing just looks fantastical. Like if you said it was out of a sci-fi thing, I would believe you. But it's based on a real place, and it's just an incredible, it's an incredibly well built level, as are most of the Hitman levels.
Yeah. We're going to move on to the next item. Doom, the Classics Collection, coming to Nintendo Switch and PS4. This comes to us from My Nintendo News. Not My Nintendo News. I don't have any Nintendo News. Their Nintendo News. Limited Run Games today, and by the way, Limited Run does a lot of this special edition physical stuff. Limited Run Games have announced today that Doom, Doom 2, and Doom 3 is coming to Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4 physically, with pre-orders for the Standard, Special, and Collector's Edition opening on the 2nd of April. The package is called Doom Classics Collection, and the special edition comes with tons of goodies that fans will love, such as a themed 8GB USB floppy, marine helmet keychain, art prints, and more. Currently, the standard version lists for $30, and the collector's edition lands for $80. More importantly, it comes with a reprint of the original 1996 comic, which is best known for Rip and Tear! Rip and Tear! Which was incorporated in... What?
I think it's funny that the USB drive floppy disk, it has in parentheses, no game on floppy.
Yeah, because, because here's the thing. It says on the front, Doom Shareware, disk 1. So they want to make sure that people understand. No, the shareware is not actually on this.
It's just a nice label, nostalgia there.
For those of you who don't know, shareware were extended demos in which you could play a third of the entire game with the developer saying, well, if you like this, please pay us a little bit more and you can get more game.
Yeah.
remember demos?
Yeah. We still have demos. Now.
Yeah, but shareware was sort of obsequious in which they treated the customer like something special, in which they said, we pray to you, almighty customer, if you liked what you played, please show us some gratitude with $24 because you love us so much.
Yeah.
Now it's sort of like, yeah, money please.
Yeah. The collection does look really nice. You have a steel case, you have the comic, and I like the keychain and the little red key card.
That's it's a replica of the key card.
Yeah. That's a nice collector's edition.
Yeah. The thing about it is that I'm wondering, did this take place before the ZeniMax merger? Or ZeniMax acquisition?
I suspect
it was before it. Not that the original Doom and Doom 2 and Doom 3 are really, you know, hot properties, you know, that Microsoft needs exclusivity on. Microsoft's going to get money for this, but I don't think they're so worried about having these games, since they've already appeared on those platforms, well, not on the Switch, but, you know, it's already appeared on the PlayStation platform.
Yeah. I don't know, like, I know that, like, obviously Limited Run has to work with the original, like, developer and such for the licensing and stuff. But I don't know if past that, like, they need the... I don't know if Microsoft plays into Limited Run's decisions about what they do with the special edition of the game.
It's still a license. What I love about the Classics Edition Collection box is that it has all those stickers that you would find on boxes back in 1996. You remember, all these stickers are plastered on it. Game of the Month from this thing. Oh, what's it called? E3, you know, and all these stickers that we plastered right on the front. And also those stickers that the EB or GameStop or whatever would have on them, too.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, either way, this is maybe... Limited Run has been on a good roll lately. These special editions have been really nice. The Scott Pilgrim one before this was really good.
Oh, you went. We talked about it. You went off on about that game, about that Limited Run, that is.
Yeah, the stage diorama, that was a really cool collectible.
Yeah.
And these are cool too. Like I really find the USB floppy disk to be pretty funny.
Right now they also have the No More Heroes Destroy bundle for $140.
Uh-huh.
Comes with a flag and a bunch of other stuff.
Like Limited Run has been on a good roll lately with like what they've been putting together. They've been putting together some really quality collectible versions of these games. And I'm happy to see Doom get some love. This is a really good looking set.
And just so you know, they still have... Oh, no, it just was sold out. Never mind. I was looking at the Switch, the Scott Pilgrim versus the World Switch Limited Run, and yeah, it was just sold out. It's like, you know, it was released in February, and now it's done. I mean, the pre-orders closed on February 28th, and it got sold out. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy your feedback, leave us a comment on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon. Oh, wait. Oh, I'm sorry. I almost forgot. We have some listener feedback. Take it away, TJ.
From our pal Ralph. Hi guys. As always, thanks for the episode. Nintendo show. There was nothing very exciting for my taste. Remakes and stuff we already know. But maybe some games surprised me. We will see. Ghosts and Goblins. This game is exactly what I liked, but I still did not buy it because it looks so goddamn hard, and I am a little bit afraid that it will frustrate me too much.
Wait a minute. Didn't you say that there is a mechanic for people, you know, what's called when you replay it. I forgot what it was.
There are quite a few mechanics. For one, it has a difficulty level, which is unheard of in Ghost of Goblins. you can reduce the difficulty down to straight up, you don't die even if you die. On the very lowest difficulty, you'll basically be knocked in, you'll be killed and you'll turn into bones like usual. But then you just respawn right where you started, right where you died. There's also magic systems in the game that you can use to like make it easier, and there's all sorts of stuff to like reduce the difficulty curve in Ghosts and Goblins.
Mm-hmm.
Normally I like it when it's hard, but it should not be too frustrating and want me to throw the controller away. And yes, the torch is awful. Yes, the torch is awful. It's a little bit better in the remake than it was in the original games, but it's still not great. Valheim. I don't get the hype about this game. Watched a streamer for an hour and was bored as hell.
It's that kind of game. I mean, it's a it's like Minecraft meets Rust.
Vikings.
Well, Rust. I mean, I'm talking about gameplay style.
Rusty Vikings.
It's a building game, and not building games aren't for everyone. But I thought it was still a challenging game.
Yeah.
BlizzCon. It was interesting, but there was nothing unexpected or really shocking or new.
Wait a minute. Nice to... Hold on. Diablo 2 Remaster was not something I was expecting at all.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that either, and I'm hyped to actually go back and play that game.
Yeah.
but Ralph was not impressed. It was okay-ish. Only thing I am hyped for is Diablo 4, but we already knew that it would. But we already knew that it would come. Maybe I'll revisit Diablo 2, but I prefer co-op.
Here's the thing about Diablo 2: I never played competitive Diablo 2. It was always co-op. I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people who enjoyed playing PvP Diablo 2 multiplayer. But seriously, just having people just rape your corpse and just run off with all your stuff, that does not appeal to me.
Yeah. excuse me. I've heard all the stories about like certain builds, certain styles, and gameplay in that game, and I'm looking forward to like seeing it for myself finally.
And you know, I am hyped for Diablo 4 too. I hope they do it right. I hope they get the nice that loot grind loop that Diablo 2 perfected, which still has not been surpassed. Even World of Warcraft doesn't have as good a loot grind loop.
Yeah, I would. Well, I guess I can't really say until I get there, but I have heard that they made it a more enjoyable dungeon crawler, and the fact that like it doesn't feel there's more context, there's more fun, and it doesn't feel like such a slog.
Here's the thing: Diablo 3 was built revolving around that auction house, which distorted the game. So I'm willing to see what Diablo 4 does without that distortion.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, moving on.
Overwatch 2. I really love Overwatch and have played thousands of hours, even if I'm not that good at hero shooters. But like you guys mentioned on the show, it does not look like a sequel, more like an add-on or something like that. Burning Crusade. I am playing a lot of WoW Classic at the moment, and that still got me. Retail did not catch me, but Classic and BC, I am in. About the board games. I really love board games and pledged so many on Kickstarter, and they all arrived during this fucking pandemic, so I can't play them right now.
Oh, I know how you feel, Ralph, because the same is with me. I just... the latest game that just arrived is Tiny Epic Pirates, which has a solo mode, but I don't want to play solo. I want to play with someone else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have the Thing board game and
Nemesis board game, and trust me, I want to play that too. Even though it too has a solo game, but have you played Nemesis?
I have not, but I was gonna say I have the Thing board game and the Call of Cthulhu and the Arkham Horror board game, and they're just sitting in the corner collecting dust because I haven't been able to play them for a while.
Here's the thing about Nemesis that makes it better than something like the Thing. In the Thing, you're assigned the role of a traitor, meaning mm-hmm. from the very start you're a traitor. In Nemesis, which is basically Alien, right? Mm-hmm. You're given two objectives. And at some point, you choose one or the other. One is co-op, the other one is betrayal. So in that, you're actually making the choice to betray if you betray. It was not forced on you. It's not, you are a villain, you're going to play as a villain, and that's your... No. Everything you do, you made the decision to fuck over your friends. It wasn't something that forced... You made that decision. Anything that happens... You have to own up to it.
mm-hmm.
Which makes it a miles difference when you get to choose whether you're with the group or not, or against one person in the group. Because it could be like, your mission is either to do this or kill player one or make sure player one dies. And, oh, by the way, if everyone else dies, it still counts. And you say, you know what? I'm never going to be able to make the co-op thing, so I'm just going to screw over the entire team, have the ship self-destruct while I'm flying off in my escape shuttle. And the funny thing is, in a game like that, people don't get angry at you. They just laugh. There'll be a little bit, but it's sort of like, you got us. Because, oh, by the way, I wanted to kill you, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it is... when you have a choice to become a traitor in a game, that just amps up the storytelling.
For sure.
Minecraft Dungeons.
Yeah. Minecraft Dungeons. I still don't get why people play Minecraft. Just kidding. But this game did never catch me, and I believe it never will.
Yeah, I mean, Minecraft Dungeons is basically a social experience in which you and friends are going to do some Diablo. I mean, it isn't easy, but it is stripped down from Diablo. And there's no building in it, which I don't understand why not.
Mm-hmm. And I am not playing retail WoW. I'm only playing Classic. I played through Cyberpunk and tried to do everything and really every single quest. Sadly, one was bugged, so I was not able to complete everything. But the game is great, and I enjoyed playing it.
They just released a patch for it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Did you see those patch notes? It was a mile long.
Which, you know, they should have never released it in 2020.
1.2's patch notes are like those patch notes could probably fill a small book.
Like I said, they should have never released it in 2020, but they had to release it. And
yeah.
So, here's the thing.
I'm glad they're trying so hard to fix it.
Yeah. Well, they have upcoming DLC coming for it, so.
I will never forget the bug that made me, like, the bug that was like the, it was like the jump the shark moment for me.
Oh?
When I called my car, and instead of a fully formed vehicle, it showed up as like a burnt out, doorless, engineless husk.
Well, maybe that's because you abused it.
which was kind of a metaphor for my whole feelings about that game. I was expecting something so cool and unique and just functional to arrive, and instead I got a.
Here's the thing. You know how you say, "Well, my 360 never had Red Ring, and my thing's never." Well, that's the way it was with me and Cyberpunk. I played on the Xbox One X, and I experienced no bugs whatsoever. That said, it was a good game, and I will say Night City is the most engaging, lively, fully realized, well-lived-in open world I've ever been in. Ever. But the gameplay mechanics were sort of arcane. You're given all these skills, and from after playing it, none of them had any real effect. None of them actually had an effect on gameplay. They should have stripped it down, the skill trees, stripped it down to the absolute basics, and made hacking and all that other stuff a lot more simple. By the way, Fallout 4's hacking is the worst. They have you playing Mastermind, but sometimes it outright lies to you, which is why I always quick save before I do a monitor, no matter how skilled I am, because it just sucks. And everybody complains about the hacking in Alpha Protocol. I get it immediately. I just look for stuff that's not moving. What is so difficult to understand? I like that hacking. Lockpicking is fine in Fallout 4. But yeah, I don't like the hacking in Cyberpunk. I hate the hacking in Fallout 4. I was satisfied with the ending I had in my run of Cyberpunk. And sometime in the future, I will probably play Cyberpunk again. And I will probably get the collector's edition with all the DLC whenever that's released, like in 2 or 3 years, and I will happily play it again. But I'm not rushing to play it again. I will say, though, the first time that you let Johnny take you over is just one of the best gameplay moments in years for me. It just had me laughing out loud. And it's very rare that a game will make you laugh out loud. Make me laugh. Actually, you know, that demo for that game that I showed you made me laugh out loud.
Which one?
The game was called, and it is such a generic title for a game, actually. Let me see if I can find it. Name of the game was... Oh, Last Stop. It's an adventure game. It's sort of like a kooky game that uses the mechanics of a David Cage game. And the demo they show is these guys who swap bodies, and one of them is a dowdy father who's placed in the body of a software developer. So he goes to the software, and he just sneaks around in the most comical way. That's hilarious. And then they must really love Shaun of the Dead, because they have him standing in front of all these other guys, these other programmers, and he is so awkward. It's hilarious. And his motivational speech is so anti-motivational, because basically he says, you know, I'm going to tell you what my dad told me. And that is, keep your head down and try not to get fired. That's that made me laugh out loud. It's one of the few times I've actually lolled during a game. Or even a video of a walkthrough. But yeah, the first time that you let Johnny Silverhand take you over and he starts drinking and getting into bar brawls, picking up hookers, you know, just fully just going nuts, which is kind of disturbing because basically it's unwanted. You know, he's basically sexually assaulting V in that way. But anyways, but it's just Johnny Silverhand is so over the top in that, and that was something I did not expect when I first when I first knew about the game and all that stuff and what Johnny Silverhand's role was going to be. I was not expecting Johnny Silverhand to be a complete and utter asshole. Yeah. Which
that was surprising.
What?
That was surprising. I guess this is Keanu Reeves' first time playing a villain, it seems like.
He's Johnny Silverhand is not a villain, but he's not a hero either. He is just a radicalized terrorist who is going against the corporations who are evil. So if he's a villain, it's villain versus villain, right? But he's just very amoral. I think that's the best word for him, is just amoral. What he wants, he does, and he doesn't give a shit about the people around him. He has revenge on the mind, and he doesn't give a shit about you or anybody else or thousands of people. He's going to have his revenge, which is why he wanted to plant a nuke in the top of a building to destroy a corporation. And who cares who's around that nuke? TJ, did you enjoy that scene in which he takes over your body?
I mean, yeah, it was an interesting and surreal experience.
It made me laugh.
Yeah, it was
just so over the top. But, you know, like I said, the gameplay did not thrill me in terms of the mechanics. I mean, how I dealt with Atom Smasher. I decided, you know what, fuck it. I just went back as far as I can, took a sniper rifle, and just shot him in the head a couple of times. Here's the thing. You know, you get weapons, and this weapon happened to be one of the purple tiers. So, and for those who are interested, yeah, I killed him. And I killed him as V. And I basically said, you know, this is for Johnny Silverhand, and I just gutted him. Because it felt right. Johnny Silverhand was a vicious bastard, but he did not deserve to die to Atom Smasher. And I felt like I owed Johnny something. Mm-hmm. Because, okay, spoiler, you have to choose either V or Johnny Silverhand get subsumed into into a brain uploading, meaning they basically are gone forever, and the other one takes over the body. And V is dying. So if you have V take over the body, he's slowly dying. But the ending I had, I didn't use Johnny Silverhand that much. I was like at 28%. So I think it means he lives a lot longer than he thinks he will. But yeah, regardless, the story itself is satisfying. The gameplay mechanics are not.
Yeah, agreed.
And, you know, I will say this. If they make another Cyberpunk game, I'll definitely get into it because I loved being in Night City. It was just wonderful to be in that. I want every single open world game to look at Night City and say, yeah, you're supposed to do that. You're supposed to do that. That city is how you make something feel like a living city. Because I'll tell you something. You know, when you play Grand Theft Auto, it does not feel like a real city. It feels like a set piece that you're just driving around in. Mm-hmm. Do you play open world games, Scott?
Yeah. I played Skyrim. I played Witcher. I played The Fallout, of course.
Well, okay, so... Well, here's the thing about none of those games, well, especially Skyrim, none of those games feel like you're interacting with real people or walking around a real city in them. In Night City, you actually feel like those characters are their own characters.
Yeah,
that's true. Because I remember there was a particular NPC in Skyrim that would constantly
talk about the arrow in the knee.
He would comment that you've never been to Cloud District, and he would just repeatedly say that. Like,
yeah, that's one of the stock lines. Have you ever been to Cloud District? They have the most
wonderful.
Yeah, it
just got so obnoxious I killed him. And I paid off the guards. I'm like, okay, here you go. That's the fine for killing me.
I can just see the guards say, oh, he talked about Cloud City again? Well, he had it coming.
Shut up.
Yeah, we were gonna institutionalize him, but you saved the government a lot of money, so.
Yeah.
They look at the guy who constantly talks about having an arrow in his knee and say, you're next.
Yeah.
Anyways, reading the last of the letter. Go ahead, TJ. As always,
I can't say it enough. Thank you for the episode. I enjoyed listening to it. Stay healthy and happy Easter, everyone. Greetings, Ralph.
Okay, now I can say, look for our show notes at gamingpodcast.net, along with the industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback. Leave a comment on our blog at gamingpodcast.net. Also, set up at facebook.com/gamingpodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chubbs.
You can find me at Alpha Shark.
And we will see you next week.